Chapter 21 of When Thief Meets Thief by Harry Stephen Keeler. Love Under a Pacific Moon. The Ning Hua had quarters for but two couples, if necessary, though of course we were the only couples sailing on her. The captain, one Zhong Fok, who spoke fairish English, had proved finally willing to take the $150 remaining in my clothes. The fare on that ancient snail of a boat shouldn't actually have been over $50 for the pair of us, but it cost me as much as first-class passage on any of the Matson liners. The reason? Well, all I could figure was that Zhong Fok was certain that he was transporting some couple, one or both of whom was in some serious legal trouble, and so fixed his price accordingly. In fact, he hadn't been at first even willing to listen at all, but he finally capitulated when he and I got above $100 in our bargaining. For Chinese captains, after all, have mortgages on their boats and their homes and have sailors to pay. And so here the princess and I were, the only passengers, in a spotlessly clean little cabin, amidst a half-dozen Chinese and Malay sailors. Not a bit of wireless transmitting, outfit to bring help, if we sank. Nothing to do, in that case, but to get down and pray to Buddha with the rest. And nothing but an ancient six-valve radio receiving set on board, which, thank God, by the time the boat was out, was found to have a couple of bursted valves, and hence, for the entire balance of the journey thereafter, brought in not a note of jazz or a word of wearisome news of the weary outside world. 12 days of idyllic pleasure in front of us, for we'd been given by Fok to understand that it took the Ning Hua ordinarily from 11 to 13 days to make Honolulu to Frisco Passage. As a matter of fact, it took 19. The engines went all to the devil half a dozen times. Once we were becalmed 3 full days, again the screw propeller lost a blade, and a new blade had to be actually hammered out at a forge by a Chink who didn't know how to work malleable metal. Never, moreover, would Zhong Fok summon by flags any passing steamers for machine shop help or engine parts. Today I know why. He had a couple of smuggled Chinks stowed away down in the engine room itself, and so, what a run it was. But 19 days of unalloyed happiness for the princess and me. Clean meals, most Chinesey to be sure. But she and I, when we had been in our sweetheart days, had often frequented Chinese restaurants. We had a spotlessly clean deck inn to sit on, all by ourselves, and even an awning over it. And we had each other. And I'll say that because of those 19 wonderful days and nights, I'll never care again whether school keeps or not. The high spot of wry life was that little interval out of the everyday world. For I love that girl, love the pure, decent soul of her, and to cease being Jerry Hammond, cracksman, over those 19 days and to be a hero to someone, well, it was balm to my soul. And that she loved me, I was now absolutely certain. For in that one violation she made of all the conventions of her world, she upset traditions, religion, all the things that had been ingrained in her since babyhood. All that I know. And so at last, on October 20th, we were within 15 minutes of tying up at the wharf in Frisco. Complete dark had fallen, a half hour before creeping up to the wharf. I had seen a skiff slide away from the offside of the ship and head without light somewhere down the harbor. And in that skiff, moreover, were 2 Chinamen skulking flat on the bottom. A probable 10 minutes before landing, the princess and I were put into a similar skiff, again on the offside of the ship. And our Chinese sailor guide, a cheerful, smiling fellow, rowed us and our luggage quietly through the black harbor to some open dark point on land, where doubtless the other skiff had already landed its Chinks, who even now were probably being rushed into the city in a closed motor car. All this had been as T Tsung Fok's insistence, and only too glad the princess and I were to comply, so that we wouldn't have to meet custom in shipping inspectors on the main wharf. When our sailor guide reached his objective, he tied up the skiff and guiding us, toting all our luggage, including the princess's huge portmanteau, through a dark yard with tortuous railroad tracks and weeds, and out to civilization, semi-civilized at last. For where we emerged was a region of dark weed-grown lots, but with a street lamps in evidence and a streetcar track. And then our guide vanished discreetly behind us into black nothingness. Now we stood alone under a lonely street lamp. Streetcar was bawling along towards us with the word City on its lighted front platform transom. We were evidently on the outskirts of Frisco. The princess put her arms around my neck. "I love you, Jerry," she said, "and always will. But now we separate, for I know people in Frisco, even though I don't live here. And might you know, meet one of them. I go directly from here to the railroad station to return home. You take the next streetcar following Jerry, and forget both me and all that happened, won't you, dearest?" Our lips met. There was absolutely nothing I could say, knowing as I did all the circumstances that must wedge us apart for all time to come. I helped her quickly with her few things on the car that had drawn up, and as the conductor pulled his bell cord, she went out of my life forever. So I told myself as I saw the streetcar grow small and vanish.